can't see, I'm in the thunder. I be feeling like I'm cheap. Switch up like KD, Drake money, don't give me a tick. Ain't get no rest, I wrapped it right off my chest.
Ready?
Yeah.
What's going on, man? Welcome back to season two of the Fan Take. My name is Cam, and well, you know, if you're unfamiliar with the crew, if you're new here, I'm Cam, and this is my boy Tweety over here. And around here, we talk about the field, we talk about the court, and we talk about the culture. Tweety, what you got going on?
The field, the court, the culture, how y'all been, man? I know we've been gone for a minute, but we got something special coming up for y'all. Now, the playoffs coming in, NFL just ended, but it's a lot of things we got to discuss, a lot of things we missed.
Absolutely, and first starting out, this is Monday, this is May 19th, right after the closing of all the NBA semifinal matchups. It's going to be the start of the NBA conference finals. Obviously, last night we had the Thunder overtaking the Nuggets in seven games. So first, starting off with that series, the closing of that series, what you think about the Thunder taking the Nuggets in seven games?
Ah, man, I feel great. No, me being a Thunder fan, watching this series, it was scary at times because you always knew Denver could win, and Denver probably should have won, but, you know, their players just wasn't connecting. Russell Westbrook, this was probably one of the worst playoff series of his life because I don't think he went to the playoffs in the last 5 years. But this series, he just needs to forget and move on. Jamal Murray, he really wasn't what he used to be. And I guess everybody just say he just do that against the Lakers. But Jamal Murray has been consistently a decent playoff player, really a great playoff player, 2020 and 2023. Last year, he shook a little bit, but he usually be better than what he has. And like it's like he's declining. So I think the Nuggets need to take a different angle on that. The games were great. Until it was like them blowout games. They really were snooze fests when the Thunder played the defense they were supposed to play. I just believe both of those teams could have won the finals. Those were my two teams that say like one of them could have won the finals. But that series was great.
Yeah, man, it's a great series, just entertainment-wise and watching it. Yeah, you know, you talk about the blowouts and some of the games. Obviously, game two, the Thunder blew out the Nuggets 149-106, but obviously they came back. The Nuggets came back in game three, 113-104. And I've been saying recently, people that's, you know, I've talked to, you know, blowouts in the playoffs now really aren't that big of a deal because the way, you know, guys, you know, scheme and, you know, the 3-point shots and the things that these guys are making, each separate game is its own separate game. So you can get blown out, you know, in game two and then, you know, win the next two or three games. And, you know, just looking at the numbers, Shea averaged 29-6-6 for the Thunder. And also Nikola Jokic for the Nuggets, 14 boards and around 6 assists. So both, you know, the guys been balling. This was, you know, a series of the MVPs. And, you know, in the last game, game seven, Shea showed out. I believe he had, let's see, got the box score right here.
35, I think. 35, 6,
and 3. Right. Yes, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 35 points. He had three rebounds and 4 assists. Okay. Followed by, for the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic had 20 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists. So it wasn't a bad game by Nikola Jokic.
Yes,
but
it was. He attempted 9 shots. He attempted 9 shots, man. He gave up. You can't be the best player on the team. Jamal Murray struggling. He's not struggling that bad. MPJ is struggling. He's on life support. So when you got guys like that can't play up to their potential, you have to play over your potential. You are the MVP. Jokic is the best player in the league. I'm a Thunder fan. I'm a SGA fan, but Jokic is an MVP. But Jokic didn't play MVP ball last night.
I mean, you know, you look at the numbers. I was underwhelming for Nikola Jokic's stature and obviously his the way he's been playing, you know, all playoffs and all season. But, I mean, the way that the Thunder played defense last night, you know, bracketing them, throwing different guys at them, and usually in the games that Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets were successful, he was able to, you know, dish the ball to other guys were – you know, getting open, making their shots, get cut into the basket and getting their points. And just, you know, on the road, game seven and OKC, the Nuggets just were not able to do that. And, I mean, you know, you talk about MVP talk. They haven't released the MVP, announced the MVP just yet. But, you know, judging off of this game seven, even though that it's a regular season award, obviously, but you got to look at this series as kind of an indicator of, you know, who's the better player out of Nikola Jokic and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I have a feeling of who you think should be the MVP, but go ahead and tell the people what you think.
I'm just, the way I'm looking at it, it's like, if you look at the whole series, the series as a whole, Nikola Jokic outplayed Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but when you get down to them key moments, who the team needed the most, except for that one fourth quarter, I think in like game five, SGA, he's always showing up when his team needed the most. He hit tough shots. He wasn't a free throw merchant this series. Jokic shot probably double the free throws that SGA shot this series. So it's like, when you need him, you got him. So that's why I think SGA should be the MVP. But Nikola Jokic, regular season, he outplayed him. So that's just the way I see it.
Yeah, and I feel the same way too. A lot of times in this series, I mean, you know, Nikola Jokic was just anchoring the Nuggets, you know, so hard, just like how he's been the entire regular season. If you look at the numbers for the entire regular season, this was Nikola Jokic's best statistical season out of all, I mean, obviously out of his entire career, but out of all the MVP seasons he's had, this has been his best statistical season. And, you know, you look last year when Nikola Jokic won and Shai Gilgeous was runner up. Me personally, I thought that Shai Gilgeous should have been the MVP, but Nikola Jokic won it. And now this year, I've seen a lot of people saying statistically Nikola Jokic probably should be the MVP. But the way it's looking, the way the media has been swaying things, you know, in the last, not really just in the last few weeks, but in the last couple of months, I seem like a lot of guys in the media are putting their attention and their love and their passion towards Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So, you know, a lot of eyes on him, especially now winning that the Thunder won game seven against the Denver Nuggets. It seems like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be the MVP. Anything else you got to say about it?
Jokic's the MVP, man. Give him the award. He won it. As a Thunder fan, he won it.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, the way that the media is trying to sway history nowadays with saying, you know, hey, this give this person MVP this year because he hasn't won it yet. We don't want to give this person MVP because he's already won two MVPs. Because, I mean, you say that the year that Joel Embiid won MVP, you could probably say Nikola Jokic deserved MVP that year, but they don't want to give him Nikola Jokic back-to-back. And you look, last year, they gave the MVP to Nikola Jokic. And you probably feel like Shai Gilgeous should have won. Yeah. But they said, well, you know, we don't think Shai Gilgeous is proven yet. But now that he's had two seasons of playing MVP ball, and Nikola Jokic had the best statistical season he's had in his entire career, including his MVP seasons, it's hard to say, you know, who to vote for without trying to sway your opinions based on who's won it already. So looking at the next series that occurred on the western side of the bracket, we got the Minnesota Timberwolves, the sixth seed, overtaking the seventh seed Warriors in a five-game series. The Minnesota Timberwolves swept the Warriors, I should say, 4-1. Obviously, you can say Steph Curry, I believe he got injured either in game two or game three. So after basically, the initial start of the series, Stephen Curry went down. Obviously, the Timberwolves and Anthony Edwards rampaged the Warriors following Stephen Curry's exit. What do you think about this series?
My brother been talking to me crazy for the last week about this series. The Timberwolves were going to win anyway. I believe that wholeheartedly. I wouldn't think they would win in five. It might have been six or seven, possibly. But the Timberwolves were going to win anyway. They was too big. They was going to have a whole different game plan. I believe those games were so close because the Timberwolves really just knew, like, okay, we can keep these games close, but we can still win them no matter what in the fourth. So I think it looked it like if Curry was there, they would have won. But I don't believe if Curry was there, they would have won. Ant didn't really do a lot. Ant hasn't really done a lot all series. I mean, all playoffs. It's really just been Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert's been killing. And I believe Rudy Gobert would have did a lot more if Steph Curry was playing than if he wasn't playing. You feel what I'm saying? I just think that the Timberwolves were too big, too scary, and they were just better than the Warriors.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought the Timberwolves was going to beat the Warriors at the beginning, but before the series even started, especially considering how the Timberwolves played against the Lakers and how they played against a team that tried to, you know, shoot a lot of threes and play small ball like the Lakers did. Obviously, the Warriors do a lot of the same things. And, you know, so that was my mindset coming to the series, Timberwolves against the Warriors. And then, you know, I wanted to see, you know, Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler do it against a team, a squad that's, you know, had a deep playoff run last season. The Timberwolves got a lot of experience last season with that deep playoff run. And obviously, you know, even though Cat was traded off, they got Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo back, who are very good basketball players, who play their role very well, can have a good game any night and play their role, and very scrappy on defense and things of that nature. So I gave the Timberwolves the edge. And, you know, if you look game by game, the Timberwolves looked like the better team, even when Steph Curry was there. Obviously, the Warriors looked better when Stephen Curry was there. And, you know, talk about Jimmy Butler. Looking at the stats for this series, he averaged 20 points, 7 rebounds, and around 5 assists. Wow. And, you know, I think he just came into the series just, you know, feeling like a Robin. You know, he couldn't get back into that Miami Heat type of mindset and type of play on the court. And I think it showed. I think the Warriors just all together, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, just, you know, shell shocked after Stephen Curry's departure.
We talking about the wrong people right here. We should be talking about Kuminga. Kuminga had a very great series. Yeah. Kuminga was the Batman of the series when Steph Curry went down.
Especially after Steph Curry went down and Steve Kerr decided to put him in.
Jimmy just couldn't. I don't know what was up with Jimmy. Jimmy took, I think it was 11 or 13 shots the elimination game. He took like 11 shots the elimination game. Why are you taking 11 shots? Same thing I just said with Nikola Jokic. If you're the number one player and you have all these guys around you that are not ready to win, like, they're not ready to win. Christian Braun shouldn't take more shots than Jokic. Kuminga shouldn't take more shots than Jimmy Butler. Draymond Green shouldn't have the same amount of points as Jimmy Butler, or at least even close. They should not be in a 5-point radius. So you got players that's not used to being in that spotlight, taking the spotlight from you when you're Jimmy. We're having to play out Jimmy. We've been talking about playoff Jimmy so long just for him to get to the playoffs and get on a team that can win and still not do anything. Like, if you would have took that series to 6 and Steph Curry would have came back, you probably could have won that series, but you couldn't do it. You just didn't show up when it was time to show up. You played like a rookie, and you let the rookies play like the vets. That was bad.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to give power to the Timberwolves, though. Obviously, the Warriors, you know, their chemistry and, you know, things of that nature was tested and was kind of shell shocked, especially after, you know, Kuminga basically didn't play the whole Rockets series, didn't play the first couple games of this series until Steph Curry went out because, you know, whatever Kuminga, Steve Kerr, the head coach has going on. And, you know, obviously Steph Curry went down. Warriors just completely shell-shocked. Jimmy Butler, new kid in town, even though, you know, we see him play out of his mind on the Heat, he just couldn't get back to that mindset because, you know, he's just been falling behind Steph Curry. But, you know, going, looking to the looking to and previewing the Western Conference Finals, obviously we have the number one seeded Thunder going against the number 6 seeded Timberwolves. What do you look forward to in this Western Conference Finals series?
Man, I'm just ready. But I got to throw my first hot take out of there. You know, I like to test the waters and everything. I got Thunder at 4, man. I don't see a world where the Timberwolves beat the Thunder in a game. Like, okay, so the first two at home, I don't think they can win the first two at home. The Thunder going to win the first two at home. Then you're going back to Minnesota or whatever. The Thunder scribes in game threes. So I believe they can get game 3-2. And then if it's 3-0, it's over. But I don't think the Timberwolves have enough firepower. They do, but I think the Thunder play 11-man rotation in the playoffs. Like, in close games, the Thunder play probably 9 people in the playoffs. There's no other team playing 10, 11 people that deep. So I don't think you can keep up and like play to the best of your ability, because the Thunder bench is better than anybody's bench in the league. Nobody bench is better than Thunder bench. So when the bench comes in and everybody has to get out, and Anthony Edwards ain't been playing worth for anything this whole playoffs. Well, he has, but you know, it's not Anthony Edwards. It's not scaring you. The Timberwolves slid under the radar, man. I don't believe they should be here. So I got the Thunder winning in probably five, probably a gentleman sweep. That's my hot take. That's my hot take of the day, really.
I don't know about four games, but I kind of, you know, I agree with your mindset and your synopsis of it. Yes, the Thunder are obviously an amazing team at home. They've been an amazing team at home since, you know, their relocation to OKC. And then you talk about, obviously, the Timberwolves. They've gotten to some slow starts their entire playoff series. Well, not the entire playoff series, but their entire, you know, playoff run thus far. And, you know, what I got to say, though, Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards, that's that's a bad man. And, you know, he can win you one game, you know, in any given time, any given night. And, you know, if the Timberwolves can steal one game at home out of those first two games at OKC, it's going to be a good series, interesting series, you can say. The old tidbit is that, you know, a series doesn't start until a team wins on the road. And, you know, if the Timberwolves come out and they can strike the Thunder in their very first game on the road, then you have yourself a series. So, yeah, that's you know, my synopsis of what to look forward to. The Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards, they got them a bad man on their hands, and he can win you a game any given night.
You got Anthony Edwards. You got him. You got Dort, Caruso, Wallace, Shea, Dub. All of them can guard the one through the three. So we got the defense for it. Then you also got Chet, Hardenstein. You seen Caruso last night.
Oh, yeah, Caruso's amazing. Five. Yeah.
So we got so many guys that can guard so many, the best players at so many positions and get multiple steals. Man, I don't think they can keep up. The ball, who was the ball handler on the Timberwolves? Mike Conley? He can't keep up.
Bro, come on.
Dort is going to harass him. He can't keep up with that, man.
Well, one thing you got to look forward to on the Timberwolves, they got guys that can guard too. Dante DiVincenzo, he is scrappy. Anthony Edwards can get behind it on defense. Mike Conley can get behind it on defense, even though he is undersized. Obviously, Rudy Gobert has been, you know, defensive player of the year, you know, so many times. He's, you know, a rim protector. He gets a little dicey when you can bring him out to the perimeter, but you know, you can't undermine his defensive prowess. Jay McDaniels, he is after on defense, so. If I look at it, I think they have two pretty similar starting five. Yes, they do.
Starting five.
I mean, obviously, I would give Chet the edge on Rudy Gobert as far as on the offensive side. But I mean, you talk about Chet defensive prowess and Rudy Gobert defensive prowess.
It's not the difference.
Being long, you know what I'm saying? Being long, being lanky, getting in the middle, passing lanes, being a rim protector. It's very similar. Jaden McDaniels, you know, multi-dimensional defender, along with, you know, Lou Dort the same way, Alex Caruso way, Dante DiVincenzo the same way. So it's they're similar builds, but I would say talent-wise, I would give it the edge to the Thunder, and obviously they got the first two games at home. You know what they can do at home. So
you're talking about the five and the five. Okay, let's match the five and the five. You got Conley and you got Shea. We ain't got to talk about that one. Then you got who's the, you got,
you say Anthony Edwards and Lou Dort
would play the
but honestly,
that's a gruesome matchup, man. Yeah. And Lou Dort can catch fire from three at any time. Then you got McDaniels is gonna disappear two games.
As far as offensively, offensively, he has his games, but mostly his calling cards is being a multi-dimensional defender.
Yeah, and with this much defense and seven games, he's gonna disappear a lot. So Jay McDaniels, I got Dub. You know, I'll scratch him. Chet, you know, Julius Randle got the experience, so I might get to Randle. Then you got Hardenstein and Gobert. That's pretty an even matchup. So it when you look at the five, you just made me look at that. It might be a great series. It might go to 6 or 5. So it might be a great series.
Going to the Eastern side of the bracket, I don't know if there's much to talk about this five-game semifinal series, but the Pacers overtook the Cavaliers. The number four seeded Pacers overtook the number one seeded Cavaliers in five games, a 4-1 gentleman sweep. What do you think about that series? They won 60 games, man.
Cavs, man.
60
Cavs,
game Cavs.
Cavs. Cavs. Cavs.
First seed.
You do this every year.
Every single year. It's just the second year to head up and mention.
That's too many years in a row. To have the number one seed and do nothing. You lost in five games to the Pacers. Like, okay, there's no disrespect to the Pacers, but the disrespect to the Pacers is the Pacers. Everybody thought last year was a fluke. This year, you can't even say it's a fluke. The Pacers actually came and showed you something, but the Cavs still with a way better team. Evan Mobley, where were you? Darius Garland, where were you? Where were you at? Donovan Mitchell, I salute you. You did what you could do. Jared Allen, I didn't hear about you all series. Did he even play? I heard nothing about you. Did he play?
Yes.
So it's like, where were y'all guys, man? Who else? Then they just get DeAndre Hunter. What was he? Like, y'all got all these guys saying, okay, we ready for the playoff. We ready. We can make a deep run. I'm thinking the Cavs will at least go to the conference finals. Y'all got all the players. Y'all got an 8-man rotation of guys that probably can start on any team. But and y'all just choked that bad, man. That's choke, man. Five games? Six? I'll be like, okay, yeah, y'all had some injuries. But five? Y'all had enough people to go through them injuries and at least take it to six games. Y'all lost a five, man. That's sad. I pray for them.
But yeah, man, I mean, I don't have a lot to say about this series. Donovan Mitchell averaged 34 points per game, and I mean, his teammates just couldn't come along for the ride with him. The Pacers, they played amazing. They feel like a some type of college team, just, you know, so much spirit, so much, you know, ball moving around, so much, you know, offense equally amongst their guys. And, you know, you look at the stats, Tyrese Halliburton obviously is the head of a snake, and he led the Indiana Pacers on 17 points per game and 7 assists. So it just shows you how much, you know, offense they get from multiple guys on their squad. And, I mean, like I said, it's really not much I can say about this series. The Pacers from day one, game one, just outclassed the Cleveland Cavaliers, the number one seeded Cleveland Cavaliers, the 60-win Cleveland Cavaliers. And
just keep getting worse, man. Just keep getting worse.
So you look on the other side of the semifinal bracket. On the Eastern side, you got the number three seeded Knicks took on the number two seeded Celtics. The number two seeded Celtics that won the championship last year, headed by Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Obviously, Jason Tatum went down with an injury. Was it an Achilles tendon? Yeah, right. He was an Achilles. Jason Tatum went down in the middle of the series. What do you think about the New York Knicks? The New York Knicks, who haven't won a championship since 1973, has been to the Eastern Conference Finals and since 1999, what do you think about these New York Knicks led by Jalen Brunson?
Man, I love the Knicks. I had the Knicks last year winning it all. So it's like, I always knew the Knicks could do it, but with Carl in the Towns, he's not playing out his mind, but he's balling. So when you got Brunson and Towns and Hart and OG and McBride and Robinson, you got too many players over there tonight. You know, excel. Celtics, I'm not really that mad at y'all because y'all lost our number one player. And when y'all lost them, it just was never the same. But y'all did win. What, that was game five?
Yes. Yeah, game five.
Y'all won game five. You know, Jaylen Brown did his thing. That last game, that elimination game, man, that was horrible, man. Derrick White, I think he scored, what, like 10 points in that elimination game. Peyton Pritchard, he had 11. Like, the guys that were supposed to show up when Tatum was down didn't show up. So I'm not going to fault the Celtics, but I heard they run out of money too, so they got to make some moves anyway. But I'm not going to fault the Celtics for losing this series. They were supposed to lose. The Knicks were a great team, and they just lost their first star player. It was over after that.
Yeah, I mean, but even before they lost Jason Tatum, the Knicks won the first two games of the series on the road in Boston Garden. And, you know, you look at those games, obviously the Celtics, you know, in the last 2 years, they made their calling card shooting a 3-point shot. And, you know, they've was making a, I mean, they was missing a record amount of 3-point shots in those first two games. And, you know, even though in the first, even in those first two games, though they, them missing that many 3-point shots, they only lost the first game by 3 points, 108 to 105. And they lost the second game by 1 point, 91 to 90, even though I believe they had like a 20-point lead at some point during that game. So, you know, you talk about your calling card being a 3-point shot. Obviously, you wasn't making in the first two games. You know, what do you say about the coaching, you know, not switching during those first two games?
My thing is, even when you have a team like, I'm going to compare them to the Warriors, you know, the old Warriors, they used to shoot a lot. Even they used to shoot a lot, when you're up 20, they're going to go lay the ball up. Like, it come to a time where, if I'm 5-for-31 from the three, I'm going to go lay the ball up. You have Tatum, you have Brown. Excellent driver, excellent slashers. You have people that can get to the rim. Al Horford probably can't get to the rim. You know, there's a couple people in the team that can't get to the rim. But you have people that can get to the rim. So, like, once you see the three not falling, you should stop living by it. And Kristaps Porzingis, I forgot about you. You ain't do nothing.
But they say he's been hurt. He got some type of injury that's been hampering them.
Man had 2 points in game 5.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I don't want to say it's an excuse, but I have, you know, seen reports of saying that he's, you know, been injured last for this series. So but yeah, I mean, talking about, you know, Joe Mazzulla not changing you know, the offensive strategy as far as 3-point shots. I mean, it's hard to change, you know, the identity of your team. It's been the way for the last 2 years. I was talking to my barber about this, actually, just saying, you know, you got to change. You know, you see a 3-point shot, you know, not fall down, you got to change it. But I told him, I was like, you know, it's hard having identity the last 2 years. The Celtics won a championship last year playing this type of basketball with basically the same exact roster, even though obviously they had injuries and health hamper them in this series. It's just hard changing when you've won in the way in which you have won. All right, so looking forward to the Eastern Conference Finals. As I mentioned, we got the 4-seeded Pacers making it along with the 3-seeded Knicks. Obviously, like I said, the Knicks haven't made it to the Eastern Conference Finals since 1999. Obviously, the Pacers went last year getting routed in 4 games by the Boston Celtics. What are you looking forward to? How do you think this series is going to go between the Pacers and the Knicks?
Man, they've had a lot of great series this year, but I think this might be the best. Because I'm like, the Knicks, they good. The Pacers, they good too. But none of these teams really shocked me as the championship winner anyway. But I think this is going to be a great series. I think it's for sure going to 6 or 7. It's for sure going to 6 or 7. Man. Nobody's winning. It's going to be like one of those back-and-forth series at the beginning, because I believe you got Halliburton and you got the Pacers. They're going to score a lot. And the Knicks don't have the greatest defense. They don't. They don't have the best effort because they're playing 45 minutes a game. So, like, them late-game scratches from the Pacers, get ready to see them. If the Knicks are up 20, don't turn the TV off. Because they're going to get tired. And the Pacers are going to run. They're going to score. They're going to score in transition. They're going to rebound well. And they're going to start defending, because they have so much energy that the Knicks don't have because of their coaching. So I believe it's going to come down to coaching. I don't think it's going to happen. It's going to come down to coaching.
Yeah, and I agree with you on a lot of that. This is going to be a very closely contested series. I think it's going to go either 6 or 7 games, like you said. We're just talking about the bills of both teams, their starting fives, their bench, they are pretty similar. Obviously, the Pacers go much more deeper on their roster when they're when they've been playing in the playoffs thus far. It'll be interesting to see how Tyrese Halliburton steps his game up. Is he going to try to take more of an offensive load? Because I feel like the Knicks are going to score, especially ahead by Jalen Brunson. I believe, check out Jalen Brunson's stats from the Celtics series. Yeah, so Jalen Brunson averaged around 26 points in that Celtics series. I feel like he's going to have to up their production against the Pacers, who's just been such a cleanly, offensively run team thus far. Like I said, it feel like a college team. It feel like a March Madness team, the Indiana Pacers, and how they play basketball, how they play offense, how they play defense. So, yeah, I'm thinking 6 or 7 games. I think it's going to be one of the best series in this entire playoffs, at least after or on the same level as the Thunders and the Nuggets, how they just played.
Thunder and Nuggets was like, that was a bottom three. That was one of the worst series. It was all right.
What's your prediction? Who's making the finals?
I got Thunder, and I'm a Knicks fan, so I'm gonna say the Knicks. I really don't want to make that call to game three, because it's like Tyrese is running that team, man. He's running that team great. Then you got Siakam, man. He's playing out of his mind. Miles Turner, he's starting to do something. I don't know, man. But I got Thunder Knicks. I'm gonna go Thunder Knicks.
Man, I don't know. I really love the Timberwolves, but I think, you know, just the way the Thunder has played this year, I mean, they've, as far as doubters, they prove all their doubters wrong thus far. They made it to the Western Conference Finals. They got, you know, the Timberwolves, who has made it to the Western Conference Finals already, but, you know, wasn't able to take that next step last year. So both teams are motivated already. Both of them have had their doubters thus far. And then you look at the Eastern side, I'm giving the edge to the Knicks just because of how talented they are and the peaks of their play and the teams that they had to play, including the Boston Celtics on last year's finals winner. But the thing with the Eastern Conference Finals matchup is that both of the teams are cursed. Like, obviously, the Knicks have won championships since 1973, and then the Pacers, I mean, you know, getting beat by LeBron every year, and then obviously way back with Reggie Miller and Jermaine O'Neal and all those guys running against Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan every year. And then obviously they played, the Pacers and the Knicks played in the late 90s as well. So it's a toss-up, especially considering history of two cursed teams. But just off of talent and roster and how they played thus far, I give the edge to the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals. All right, so Brock Purdy just signed a brand new 5-year, $265 million contract extension, which includes $181 million in guaranteed money. And it hasn't been confirmed yet, but it's believed that he might have a no trade clause in that deal as well. So I see how you're looking over there. I also should mention, this puts him in the same contract range as Jared Goff. Obviously, Jared Goff has played very good in the last few seasons for the Detroit Lions, going to a NFC conference championship. Obviously, losing, they have made it to the Super Bowl, but they have made it to the conference championship. So what do you think about this new contract and extension for Brock Purdy?
So what is that? 53 a year?
It's around $50 million a year. Yep.
The guy's a system quarterback, man. you're paying a system. What did he do last year? You're paying a system quarterback $53, $54 million a year. I don't understand it. He's what? Now he's in the realm of what? Top four paid? Top three paid?
He's probably around top five, because Obviously the top apron right now is Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. And then after that, you have, you know, Jared Goff. And, well, obviously, don't forget about Deshaun Watson, even though, you know, he's not playing. But yeah, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow. Then after that apron, you got Brock Purdy and Jared Goff, as I mentioned.
Okay, so if Deshaun Watson didn't like getting massages, I would pick the son. I would pick everybody in. You just said, oh, well, Brock Purdy, there's no way you should be getting paid that high. Brock Purdy is, it's like, if you put Brock Purdy on the Oakland Raiders, you're going to lose every game. You're going to go, what, 2-16, 2-17. You're going to lose. Brock Purdy was winning because of what he had. You just lost Deebo Samuel. You just lost a lot of the defense. Man, this is going to be a horrible year for the 49ers, man. The 49ers, if you're a 49ers fan, sell your jersey, man. Go to Baltimore. Do something. Like, sell your jersey. Man, you're going to cry. You're going to cry this year. You're going to be hurt. That was horrible. It was horrible. I don't see why anybody would pay somebody that does what he does that much money.
Yeah, it's a real contract for me. And I've been looking forward to this contract news for quite some time now. It's just... Yeah, I agree with you. From how he has played with, you know, talented guys and how he's played without talented guys, obviously, you know, you can look this last season, this past season, as evidence of, like, you know, he just doesn't play that well when he's the only guy. When Debo is healthy and he's playing well, and obviously Christian McCaffrey, when he's there and he's playing well, I mean, the offense looks amazing. You know, it looks like Brock Purdy can't miss. But then when they're not there, 49ers, you know, are losing football games. Brock Purdy is throwing interceptions. He's fumbling the ball. And then, you know, you look at the guys that the 49ers had to let go this season. They lost Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga to the Denver Broncos in free agency, if I'm not mistaken. Javarius Ward, the cornerback, to the Indianapolis Colts in free agency. They traded away Debo Samuel, who I guess, you know, you could say that his play has regressed in the last couple of years. And I believe they released the Pro Bowl fullback, Kyle Juszczyk, along with Leonard Floyd.
Wait. They released Kyle Juszczyk?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's different. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's an interesting move. And, you know, the 49ers believe in him. You got to believe in him. You know, I feel like his contract should have been more in line numbers-wise with guys like, you know, Geno Samuel, who just signed to the Raiders. Geno Smith from tripping.
Yeah, he messed me up. Who is this?
Geno Smith, who the quarterback who just signed to the Raiders, and Sam Darnold, who just signed with the Seahawks. I feel like his contract should have been numbers-wise along the lines with those guys, where you can have more room to you know, get other guys. But they also drafted a lot of players this year. I think they drafted around like 11 players this year. So, and you can't say the 49ers have drafted well in the last few years. I mean, they get Pro Bowlers after Pro Bowlers. So I'm guessing hopefully they thinking that they can grow those guys and they can be in contention in the next 2 or 3 years. I don't think they're going to be in contention next year.
No.
I don't think they're going to be in contention next year.
5 or 6 years. Been sentenced to time in prison for this.
But, hey, I love using Kyle Shanahan, man. He's one of the best offensive minds in the game. Nonetheless, you know, just an amazing head coach. And obviously, they made it to the Super Bowl last year, losing overtime to amazing Kansas City Chiefs. So it's going to be an interesting move to look forward to the next, obviously, this season and the next couple of years. So now going to Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback out of Colorado, the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm winner in college football. Slid had a generational all-time NFL slide in this year's 2025 NFL draft, going 144th to the Cleveland Browns, the same Cleveland Browns who passed on him in the first round. They drafted D-tackle Mason Graham and passed on him in the third round with another quarterback, in Dylan Gabriel, Oregon's quarterback, top four Heisman finalist. Obviously, you know, generational slide. Most draft boards had him going in the first round, either third or six or nine or 21 or somewhere in the first round, just period. What do you think about this generational draft slide for the quarterback, Shedeur Sanders?
It's your fault, Dion. You did this. It's the cockiness, man. It's all it was. You drafted 143 players before Shedeur Sanders. 100 of them players aren't going to play after next year. 50 of them not even going to play at all. So to draft all of people and you got like a player like Shedeur Sanders on the board, you got teams like the Steelers. I really think the Colts, a lot of people don't think that, but I got the Colts in that thing too. They need quarterbacks, man. You got teams that need quarterbacks. And y'all passed up on him a lot of times for no reason at all, but because he said some words or talked a certain type of way. Or, I mean, it's the way you do things, but if you want to win, you pick a player like Shedeur Sanders. You don't pass up on him. So teams that are desperate, in my mind desperate, like the Steelers, y'all are desperate. Y'all need Shedeur Sanders. Who is over there on the Steelers? Who do they pick up?
As far as quarterback wise,
yeah, they picked up.
Oh, they picked up
Was it Was it Will Howard?
Yeah, they picked Will, Howard. Yeah, they picked up the Ohio State quarterback national champion, Will Howard.
Okay.
In the sixth round,
yeah, right.
Sixth or seventh
round. You got Will Howard. I don't think Will Howard was a sixth round player. I thought he was a third, fourth round player. Quarterbacks really just didn't get picked a lot. Will Howard is good, but he's not Shedeur Sanders.
Shedeur Sanders
is used to playing on teams with no offensive line, a little bit of offensive line. So you got a guy that's used to being pressured, that's used to being chased out the pocket, that's used to having to maneuver and pass the ball, that's used to playing against great talent because he had to play under Deion Sanders his whole life. You got a guy that's used to playing great football and you pass up on him just because he said a couple words. Man, this is bad business, man. And I feel sorry for the Steelers, the Saints. Sorry for the Saints, man. It's a couple more teams I really just can't put my head. I feel sorry for y'all, man, because y'all let y'all ego and what the other owners told y'all get y'all out the way of the best thing that could happen to y'all this year.
Yeah, I'm right along with you. I mean, it's so hilarious to this conversation. I'm glad that the draft is over and done with, so we just, you know, talk about it and move on. But, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. You got the Johnny Unitas quarterback. He has an FBS, all-time college football record. There is no other quarterback that has been more accurate in college football history than Shedeur Sanders. You can go to Peyton Manning. You can go to Tom Brady. Patrick Mahomes. Anybody. The most accurate quarterback of all time in college football history. He was the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. He was All-American. Mm-hmm. He was the Johnny Unitas quarterback. He was the best senior quarterback in college football last year. So it's 9-3 football team. He was throwing the ball to the Heisman wide receiver, corner, and Travis Hunter. And he had four of his wide receivers get drafted or get picked up. Yeah. So he's throwing the ball to four other wide receivers and all of them get drafted. And you look at the quarterback who's throwing all these guys the ball, including the Heisman winner, and he doesn't get picked up in the first round or the second or the third or the fourth. So it's hard. It's weird to stomach that, especially a month before the draft. You say he's going at least top three. You say he's going to at least, at the very least, the Browns in the first round, at least. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, well, maybe he's going sixth for the Raiders. Well, okay, they get Geno Smith. They don't want a quarterback. Okay, he's going number nine to the Saints. They elect to get an offensive tackle in the first round. Kelvin Banks, who's talented, they needed offensive line help. Okay, 21st, you got the Pittsburgh Steelers. They elect to get a lineman with the 21st pick, if I'm not mistaken, but I can't really remember. Steelers pass on them. They don't have a quarterback at all on the roster, I think, besides Skylar Thompson and Mason Rudolph. The Giants come out of the second round, move up to the first round, and they get Jackson Dart, which, hey, you know, I like Jackson Dart. Ole Miss right up the road. I love Jackson Dart. Throw the ball, can run with it. And all that, very talented quarterback. I can't blame you on that. But going in the second round, the Saints, who hasn't picked a quarterback, decided to get Tyler Shuck, I should say, who I haven't really heard of him. I had a few of my fair colored friends come and say, you know, he's good and stuff, but he's like 25, 26 years old. He's the same age as like Trevor Lawrence or Brock Purdy and guys like that who's been in the league for years. Justin Herbert, who's been in the league for years. And he's just not coming to the league. He's only played one starting season of healthy football, Tyler Shuck for Louisville. He's only played one season of healthy starting college football. And I've seen, you know, the clips online, the low lights, and
but then he throw a pick in the combine or something? Like, bro, like, okay. So, Tyler Shuck. Yeah. He wasn't on anybody's draft board.
I mean, he was there. He was there, but nobody expected him to get picked out.
Yeah, not like I was looking at second, third, fourth round draft boards or whatever. I was scamming them, you know, looking through. Bro,
I thought Jalen Milroe would have went above Tyler.
It's so many people that I would have put over Tyler, whatever. There's so many people. You pick the loser, man. So you're going to lose. You pick the loser, you're going to lose.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at the team that he eventually went to, the Cleveland Browns, obviously, I kind of alluded to it. Cleveland Browns, they pass it on Travis Hunter, trading the second pick, going to the Jacksonville Jaguars, going back to the fifth pick, getting Graham, the D tackle out of Michigan, amazing D tackle. They get Dillon Gabriel in the third round. They drafted another quarterback over Shedeur Sanders. They got the running back Judkins, who, I mean, obviously I love Judkins.
Right. He's
wrong. Obviously I love Judkins. Yeah. But and then they get him in the fifth round. I mean, you know, it's just such an awkward draft moves for the Cleveland Browns. But I mean, what else do you expect from the Cleveland Browns, really?
I feel bad for Dillon Gabriel because he's a great player, and he's not gonna play with Shedeur Sanders because Shedeur Sanders have been already it's already inside that Shedeur Sanders outplaying him as a rookie. He's not gonna play with Shedeur Sanders, and they probably gonna start probably Kenny Pickett first. So, yeah, I feel bad for Dillon Gabriel, but you're gonna get your shot, man. You young, you gonna get your chance.
Yeah, I feel bad for Dillon Gabriel. So I mean, I feel bad for Mason Graham as well, because I mean, if you look at the Cleveland Browns social media, I was looking at their Instagram. Almost every post is Shedeur Sanders, and he's the fifth round draft choice.
He's the guy.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, you got he's the star of the Cleveland Browns Instagram. Dillon Gabriel is sprinkling a little bit here and there. Graham is sprinkling a little bit here and there. And, you know, obviously you got the press asking the other guys about him. I remember that some guy from the press during the minicamp asked Graham what he think about Shedeur Sanders getting so much light, even though he's the first round draft choice for the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, he gave, you know, the politically correct answer saying, you know, he just focused on football and things of that nature. But it's just, you're putting so many guys in tough spots because you decided to wait to the fifth round to get Shedeur Sanders. And you can say, you know, you could have built your team a little better if you would have got Travis Hunter with the second pick. And, you know, you compare him with his, you know, Johnny Unitas quarterback and Shedeur Sanders. If you're really trying to build a team and you know, play winning football, it's all very interesting decisions by the Cleveland Browns.
It just made me think. So, if you had the plan to draft Dillon Gabriel in the third round, well, I don't think nobody knew Dillon Gabriel was going that deep either.
I don't know.
But probably at least the second round. If you had the plan to draft Dillon Gabriel in the third round, why did you trade the first round pick? Why didn't you just pick up Tyler? I mean, oh my Travis God, Hunter. I just missed Travis Hunter. Why didn't you just pick Travis Hunter, the best player in it, first and second best player, him and Shedeur to me go hand in hand? Why didn't you pick Travis Hunter? You could have just picked Travis Hunter, got Dylan Gabriel, let Shedeur go wherever Shedeur go, even if it was undrafted. Somebody's gonna pick him. The Steelers was gonna pick him up if he went undrafted. I don't know what he must have told that gotta be who he talked to. He had to been talked to the Steelers. Like, I don't know. It had to be who you went off on the Steelers. It had to be.
Well, the reports are he had a meeting with the New York Giants, and it didn't go well. The coach Daboll put a wrinkle in the plays that posted a result in the play going wrong. And I guess Shedeur Sanders took that wrong. I guess Shedeur Sanders felt like, you know, he was getting tricked to play by the Giants by them doing that in their meetings. And you know, I've seen other guys talk about it. Shannon Sharp, Cam Newton, they've said they have never heard of that before in a you know, a draft meeting. Obviously, Cam Newton is a quarterback, and he was Heisman of those and things of that nature. They've never heard of a coach putting a wrinkle in a playbook that a quarterback is just seeing for the first time to see if they're going to get the wrinkle right or wrong or not.
Wait. So he was tested.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the ego thing, man. No matter which way we look at it, it's just the ego thing, man.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, the news of that meeting not going very well went around the league and things of that nature. But, I mean, I guess we'll never know how that meeting went or what was said and things of that nature. But that is one of the things that have come out during this draft process about Shedeur Sanders.
Well, no. I give it. Middle of the season. Well, no.
So we got to talk about Cam Ward. Cam Ward is the first overall pick going to the Tennessee Titans. Obviously, draft boards and things that nature said that Cam was probably going to go number one to the Tennessee Titans. About a week or two before the draft, the Tennessee Titans canceled their quarterback meetings with all of the quarterbacks on the board, including Shedeur Sanders. So it was pretty obvious that it was going to go with Cam Ward. What do you think about Cam Ward going to the Tennessee Titans?
I love the Titans. They've always been like that team that's just, they close. So I love them for that. And man, that pick was horrible, man. And it's like everybody had him going first, but I thought what happened to Shedeur was going to happen to Cam Ward. But not, like, as far as it happened. I thought he was going to go, like, a late first. Cam Ward, he don't got that spirit to me. Like, it's like, he don't have, like, I'm the best quarterback. Like, I like my quarterback to think you're the best player on the field. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't think.
But that's
like,
the reason why Shedeur slid. Right. He's talking like that, yeah.
But it's a fine line between cocky and confidence. And Shedeur crossed that line. Cam Ward is not close. Cam Ward, it's like, he's so not cocky. He's not confident. So I just don't want to draft a player like Cam Ward, man. That doesn't go out there thinking like nobody else in this draft is better than me. I'm gonna change your program. Like I can't fault Shedeur for what he did, but Cam Ward, I believe he needs like a more of a mentality of just like I'm gonna be the best. I believe he needs to start thinking that he's gonna be the best.
I mean, I don't understand what you're saying. He probably doesn't say that publicly, but just the way he acts and how he used to talk in Miami, I think Cam Ward does believe he was the best player in the draft. I think Cam Ward thinks that he's that quarterback. I think he thinks that he can change a program. But I think he realized that he doesn't have the complexion for the protection. Like, he has to come in, be political, be say all the right things, be humble, say and talk football and nothing but football. And that's what he did. And, you know, I like his spirit. I like the things that, you know, was said about him during the Heisman ceremony and things of that nature. I think he's going to be a good quarterback. I like the sneaky. It's not really sneaky. Like, he's athletic, but he's not like the athletic of, you know, Lamar Jackson or Jay Daniels and things of that nature. He's athletic. He's got a strong arm. He can make every throw. He's very adamant and loud about watching film and things of that nature. So I think he's going to be a good quarterback and have a good career in the National Football League as long as he stays healthy and, you know, organization believes him and put a good group of guys around.
What do you think the record will be for y'all this season?
I mean, we play in a weak division. I mean, obviously you got Travis Hunter in the division now, the AFC South with
yeah.
Okay. Obviously, the Texans are the Texans. They've been mm-hmm. running things the last couple of years. You got the Jaguars getting revitalized with Travis Hunter, Cam Ward revitalizing the Tennessee Titans and the Colts. I don't expect much from the Colts.
Oh, I got y'all. Hallelujah. I'll probably win two division games. Honestly, that's even if you win that, because yeah. Anthony Richardson, them down there, they all right. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's still scary for the Tennessee Titans, man. Y'all got to do a lot, man. We better get ready, man.
But, I mean, we have a good roster. I mean, we have always had a good defense. Obviously, we got what's the guy we got from the Chiefs? Snead. We got Jeff Simmons on the D line. The other D tackle that we got last year in the draft, he was great this past season. So we always had a solid defense. On offense, we got Calvin Ridley. We lost DeAndre Hopkins, but I mean, he was getting older. We probably didn't want to keep him that long anyway. But I mean, you got the tight end Okonkwo. He's good. He's solid. So I mean, he's got an offensive, you know, squad around him. You know, all he had to do was just play his role. Don't turn the ball over. Make the right passes. Got the running back, Tony Pollard. He's still there. I mean, he's got the offense around him. Will Levis made it look bad. Levis made it look bad last year.
Will Levis made it look amazing. It was so humorous. But you have everything you need. But what's the offensive line look like? And that's the
problem. It's average. It's average. It's not the best offensive line in the league, but it's average.
And you have a rookie.
Yeah.
And you have a division of teams that's slowly getting better.
Yeah, the Colts and the Texans definitely have a great defensive line, for sure.
It's scary, man. Yeah. It's very scary.
Yeah, but you say record. I give the Titans. I don't think the Titans are going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to be two or three games away. I think maybe like a 6-win season or a 7-win season. But I don't think it's going to be. I think the Titans won 3 games last year. I don't think it's going to be that bad.
I had 6.
I think around 7 games, 7-10.
Yeah.
Around 7 games, 7-10.
All right, we'll see, man. I got 6. I got 6 or 5. I got more 5 than 6.
All right, so you want to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, the Pittsburgh Steelers have been making a lot of headlines for many reasons. This all season, probably not all the good reasons. Obviously, you get DK Metcalf, which... And in a trade, which, you know, obviously everybody would think, you know, is a great move. DK Metcalf is an amazing wide receiver. But along with that, you don't have a quarterback. Obviously, all reports say that they're expecting Aaron Rodgers to sign, but he hasn't signed yet. You got Skylar Thompson in the quarterback room. You got Mason Rudolph in the quarterback room. And then George Pickens. You had George Pickens on the roster. Everybody kind of at first expected it to be a good wide receiver room, both DK and George Pickens in the room, but they decided to move on from George Pickens, trading him to the Cowboys for some draft capital. So what are your overall thoughts about the Pittsburgh Steelers and what they got going on this offseason thus far?
Pittsburgh, what are y'all doing? What angle are y'all taking? I had DK and George Pickens. Those are two big scary wide receiver. They scare cornerbacks. They fight. So you have two big guys that you can throw the ball to. You didn't get a quarterback. Okay, that's fine. I think you're tanking. I think you're finally trying to have that one loser season. That's what I'm trying to. That's what I'm looking at. I mean, why you give up George Pickens? Why is George Pickens gone? You got him and DK. Him and DK probably they probably weren't getting along. It got to be something like that. Man, then you passed up on Shador. You passed up on everybody in the draft. And then you let go of your wide receivers. Like, so now I'm just trying to see what angle are you taking to win. You traded off a draft capital, but the draft capital, then you didn't draft anybody. You drafted okay.
I think it's future draft capital. Yeah.
Okay, right. But I just want to know, where are the Steelers' mind tumbling? Like, what's going on right now? You gave up Justin Fields. I don't know why you gave up Justin Fields. He was great. Well, he wasn't great, but, you know, the game that Russell was out, Justin Fields did enough to win. I think it was like 4-2, 4-5-1, something like that.
4-2.
He played all right, man. He was decent. So I just believe you're just making so many bad decisions this offseason. This is going to be the first losing season for the Steelers, and I hate to say that because I enjoy them going to the first round and losing. I like them still losing the first round, so I'm a little sad, man.
Yeah, looking at the Steelers, very weird moves. I mean, with the George Pickens thing, I really don't think George Pickens and Mike Tomlin really, you know, got along that well. And then, obviously, George Pickens is looking for an extension coming up soon. And the Steelers elected to trade for DK Metcalf and give him an extension first. And I think George Pickens probably got rubbed the wrong way, probably, you know, was making uproar behind the scenes, probably with his agent and things of that nature. And, you know, he gets traded to the Cowboys. And I mean, I think that's probably the reason they decided to move on from George Pickens. I think DK Metcalf move is a great move, but you got to talk about quarterbacks, man. They're really expecting Aaron Rodgers to come there. And I like to think that Aaron Rodgers is probably going to the Steelers. They put a lot of faith in that. I think they got traded away. Did they trade with Justin Fields or Justin Fields was free agent?
I think they let him go. They let both of them go.
I know Russell Wilson was a free agent. He signed to the Giants. I don't fault you for letting Russell Wilson go. I mean, whatever. And then, but I think I would have kept Justin Fields, but they probably didn't want to pay him the money that the Jets was going to give him, so they let him go. And I mean, the most mind-boggling thing for me would be the first round letting Shedeur Sanders go, or letting, you know, a Dillon Gabriel go, or one of these other capable quarterbacks, maybe even Jalen Milroe, maybe, even though I don't think he has the arm accuracy. But I think he's, you know, okay quarterback coming out of Alabama playing the SEC and things of that nature. But I mean, that's the most mind-boggling thing to me, letting, you know, all those quarterbacks go. And you get Will Howard, I think, in the 6th or 7th round. And you know, nothing against Will Howard, but I watched a lot of his games last year. I just wasn't impressed by Will Howard, me personally. He's not athletic. He has, you know, good arm talent. You know, there's nothing wrong with his arm, but he's very inaccurate. He was throwing interceptions all the way to the national championship, including that game that they blundered against Michigan. But hey, he is a national champion. You got to give him respect for that. They did win the national championship, but talent-wise and my prediction of what he's going to do in the NFL, I don't think Will Howard is a good quarterback. So for me, looking at the Steelers, the quarterback debacle is the biggest thing that they have going on right now. Caleb Williams, the number one draft pick quarterback to the Chicago Bears last year in the 2024 NFL draft, had concerns around the Bears organization and their historical struggles with developing quarterbacks. His father, Carl Williams, explored various avenues to try to avoid the Bears, including consulting with labor lawyers to find loopholes in the NFL's collective bargaining agreement, and considered other alternatives, including joining the United Football League, the UFL, to circumvent the NFL draft and going number one to the Chicago Bears. He was also very passionate about trying to go to the Minnesota Vikings, including telling his dad, "I gotta go to the Vikings." But after those efforts, Bears general manager Ryan Poles remained his decision to try to draft Caleb Williams in first overall, including straight up telling Caleb Williams and his father, "Hey, we're going to draft you no matter what." So after that, Caleb Williams kind of, you know, took on the idea, tells his dad that, "Hey, you know, I think I can do this. I think I can change the Bears. I think I can, you know, do it." So obviously, reading this report, what do you think about Caleb Williams and his father trying to circumvent going to the Chicago Bears last year?
Caleb Williams, how crazy can I talk?
No, you can't talk that crazy.
Okay. Cool. I'm gonna say this though, with the nail polish and that thing, man, you seem like a girl, man. Why are you scared to go play for Chicago? I mean, Chicago has never had a great quarterback. They have good quarterback, never had
a great quarterback. Never had a 4,000-yard passing season.
So they never had a great quarterback. But at the same time, bro, you're a football player. I don't really see too many great things from where I'm from, but I want to be great. That don't mean I can't be great here just because nothing's great has been here. Okay, see, somebody had to build a legacy somewhere. You got to build a legacy somewhere. Somebody got to start somewhere. It's always a small town kid that starts their small town and makes it better. So I'm seeing like, and then last year you played decently at the beginning of the year. What, that was like 4-2 at one point, 4-1. Mm-hmm. It was decent at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it was pretty decent.
Then you got to the point where y'all were losing halfway because of you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like
some was the head coach, office coordinator, but yeah, it's a lot of those on Caleb Williams as well.
You're crying about this team. You don't want this team to pick you, but I mean, you produce, but then you stop producing. So this team probably crying about picking you now. So it's like, bro, like I don't get the divaness right now. And you didn't do, and what you did was probably about the same as Shedeur Sanders. So I don't get why they did that. Shedeur Sanders did this to you. So now I'm trying to see, like, what are you really doing, man? Like, what's really going on?
Yeah, I mean, for one, for me at least, coming out of college, I had Jaden Daniels over Caleb Williams from the beginning. For sure. Even though Caleb Williams won the Heisman his junior year, and Jaden Daniels won the Heisman the year following, just watching both of those two guys' games, I watched both of them in college, I thought Jaden Daniels was better, me personally. But a lot of NFL guys had Caleb Williams right there because, you know, they just say he had so much amazing arm talent. They say he was so athletic. They say he could scramble around. They say they reminded him of Patrick Mahomes and stuff like that. So that's why Caleb Williams went as high as he did. But going back to this report, obviously this report is chronicled before the NFL draft. In that process, obviously at the end of the report, you hear Caleb Williams saying, embracing, going to the idea of going to the Chicago Bears, which, I mean, okay, whatever. This is old. I'm pretty sure Caleb Williams probably don't feel like this anymore. But, you know, just I got a little bit of understanding just because, look, Caleb Williams' dad said that Chicago is a place that quarterbacks go to die, which you can't say is entirely wrong. They've never had a quarterback that had a 4,000-yard passing season in the entire history of Chicago Bears organization. So you got to understand that a little bit. But just saying, I mean, you know, if you're Caleb Williams, if you're a generational talent, you should feel like you can change that program around, especially after they got, you know, guys like DJ Moore and what's my guy, Keenan Allen, wide receivers. They got a great, good wide receiver room. Obviously, the offensive line was a little shaky, but they averaged amazing defense. The Chicago Bears always put a good defense together. So, I mean, I don't know. Looking at the first season, it's pretty shaky, but they got the new head coach, Ben Johnson, the offense coordinator from the Detroit Lions. So hopefully he should be able to do some stuff with Caleb Williams offensively and hopefully push the Bears in a good direction. The Bears have been trying to make some good moves as far as, you know, the draft and signing and trading and things of that nature. So,
man, shout out Bo Nick, shout out Patrick Mahomes, man. Y'all went to y'all teams that didn't really have nothing going on. You didn't cry, you didn't complain, and you changed the team around. I don't get this new era of football where we go tell people where we want to go and where we want to play. When you were born somewhere, your mom took you to high school and you played at that high school, played at that middle school. Now it's people in high school and middle school telling their parents where they want to play. But when have we got like this?
But you gotta look though. Back in the day, you had the Mannings. Eli Manning, he circumvented going to the Chargers and ended up going to the Giants. Got a complexion for the protection. And John Elway, he was trying to avoid going to the Colts and to get to the Broncos. So you got history way back when of quarterbacks who had a complexion go to the teams that they wanted to go to. But it was present day, if you look like a GP.
Wherever you want me to play, I'm playing, and I've always been like that my whole life.
Yeah.
So I don't see the complaint. Like, I don't care how good you are, how much better you think you are than somebody, you can't pick your draft position, and you should want to go first because that's something special to say. I went first in the NFL draft. You can tell your kids, you can tell your grandkids can tell their grandkids that okay, yo great great granddad, he went first in the NFL draft. That's a lot. That's an accomplishment, man. So to not even want to have that accomplishment just because you don't want to play for this team, which we all know at this point, you can be switched. You can go anywhere you want to, as long as you got the power and, you know, the respect, and you that type of player. So it's not like, what do people be complaining for? Like, just go show you can do what you can do. Even if you have no line, some line, do as much as you can on that team. Then you go where you want to go. You end your career where you want to end your career. But you have to be established. People are coming in like they're already established, man. You ain't did nothing. You was what? They were four games before that year, four games last year? Man, you did nothing, man. You did nothing.
Well, look, guys, that's it for the first episode of Season 2 of The Fan Take. I'm Cam, and that's Tweety. And we'll see you again next time.
Okay, see, I'm in the thunder. I be feeling like I'm cheating. Switch up like KD, Draymond, don't give me a text. Double team, bitch, in your bitch. Hooping like I'm on the net. Working hard, can't get no rest. I wrapped it right off my chest.